Well, welcome to Nature Back, the talk show where we discuss about the green future of our planet. My name is Tarmo Virkki, and today my guest is Zoe Peden. Zoe, tell us what you do.
Thanks, Tarmo, for inviting me on the podcast. So, what do I do? So, I'm a partner at Ananda Impact Ventures. We're a European VC from C to Series A impact. So, the areas that we look into are climate, education, diversity and empowerment, and also healthcare. So, across all those four different areas, we've been around for 13 years now. So, one of the original impact tech investors on our fourth fund, about halfway through deployment of that now. It's 108 million euros, so 200 million euros under management. And the team is based across, well, it's Germany and the UK, but we cover the whole of Europe. I'm actually in Barcelona at the moment, a really thriving new impact tech hub, actually.
That's wonderful.
And so the headquarters are in Munich. We've got an office in Berlin and an office in London. And I'm based, normally based in London. And how about, would you be interested in how I got to know Ananda? Because I think that's really maybe an interesting one for your listeners, wherever they are, whether they're in the Europe or the US. Probably a more familiar story for the American listeners than the European ones. So what happens a lot in venture capital in Europe is many people come from a banking or consultancy background. So they spend a lot of time with numbers or a lot of time working on a strategic project for 2 years at McKinsey. Then they decide, or Goldman Sachs, and they decide they want to go into VC. So they never built anything and never, took those kind of risks themselves. Not saying that they're not any good, it's just a different skill set. Whereas in the US, you get about half of VCs coming from an entrepreneur background. So I'm one of those entrepreneurs. So Ananda were my investors 10 years ago in my company. So it wasn't in climate, it was in healthcare. So, but it was in assistive technology, helping people with severe learning difficulties communicate. I built a piece of software. So essentially, my background's software product. So over 2 decades building products, 10 years for other people within corporates, and then 10 years as an entrepreneur myself. And then when I exited that company, I became a venture partner at Ananda because I knew a lot of founders, basically. I had a very good, strong founder network, particularly around impact tech. I was one of the first impact tech entrepreneurs in the UK, as they called us then, this kind of attachment. I think before we were called something like social entrepreneurs, but I didn't quite fit that mold because I came from a technology background. And I guess that this links into how impact investing has evolved and matured as an industry itself. And my journey and Ananda's journey is representative of that. So I came in wanting to build a company that had the similar heart and the like, driven by a mission and the outcomes of a charity that I'd worked for. That kind of feeling of being driven, why you get up in the morning, being really driven and being able to measure the difference that you make with what you build. And I also do that with tech. Now, it sounds, but people didn't quite know where to position those two things 15 years ago. There wasn't anything around. It wasn't spoken about. You're either one or the other. Like, oh, aren't you an angel? I used to get called because I was helping people. Well, really, not really an angel. Not at all, actually. And don't be so patronizing. Just because I want to do something, either, want to change the world, whether it's the environment or whether it's people's health. That's not, this just something that we want to do, and we do it seriously. And you can use technology to be able to do that. And so it was about changing this narrative that this was not charity. You don't have to have philanthropic investment into this. We can make money. And we can do this alongside doing good. And that's how Ananda started too back then. So they were kicking off their first one when I was kicking off my business with the same feelings. And when you listen to the founders, Florian and Johannes, talk about Ananda, they'd worked in VC, and they'd also worked on philanthropic things, and they were, and the World Wildlife Fund, they actually managed to fund an asset management fund for them, but you couldn't measure the impact. And they wanted to set up something where you could start to measure the change. And for the people that would put the money in the fund, you could say to them, this is the difference that you're making. And we're also making this money for you as well. And that's how Ananda started.
I think in 2023, this measuring the impact is probably much more on agenda on many, many more investment firms than just Ananda.
Oh, yeah. I think if I remember correctly, 2014, we worked with the European Investment Fund, who were one of our investors, and together we set up the impact carry model. So this is a model where you have a number of KPIs, sometimes just two, maybe three with some of the later stage ones going towards Series A, but keeping it quite light and easy, linked towards the business model and towards the impact. So going off a theory of change, which is essentially this is what I am doing and this is where I want to get to, which is that outcome is a long way away. And then what are the outputs on the way towards that outcome? Anyone that works in project management will know all those terms. But that outcome being so far away, whether it's around, biodiversity measures and making so many, countries or companies nature positive, or whether it's about changing, 10 million people's lives, or, so they have improved healthcare. That's a long way away. And how do you measure what's there on the way to that? And those are the impact metrics that we, that we put together. And those are tied to the carry. So if those impact metrics don't reach 60% of their targets, we don't see any carry. So therefore, we're motivated and values aligned with those founders. And the founders really love that this is there, because they come, all the founders that we work with, they're there for a reason. They've sacrificed probably better paying jobs than the one that they're in, and it's 10 to 15 years of their lives often, sometimes even more than that. And many other things they could be doing, all with this purpose, not primarily to make money, but obviously that's a bonus from doing it, so they could do other things, but to make that change, whatever that change is, and to have investors that are financially aligned with you makes a much healthier business. Because we know all these pressures that the entrepreneurs put themselves through to create this change. So at least, at the very least, you should have investors who are aligned, for the same mission as you.
Absolutely. Otherwise, it's quite an impossible task to actually build something.
Well, at some point, they could go on a different angle. Like, you could see many of them. So we've got two investments in satellite and space tech. One of them's in Aurora Tech, which is a nanosatellite for prevention and detection of wildfires, and then another one which is looking at the detection of methane, AIRMO. And this information could be used by the defense industry to be able to do things. But as long as we're there and we work with other impact investors, we can make sure that the entrepreneurs are not tempted by the large contracts that the defense industry is currently receiving, such a massive resurgence at the moment, that they don't have to go that way. And the same thing applies when we look at the healthcare ones, that they're not tempted by working with opioid manufacturers or anything that could taint, the future of this startup, throwing money at them to impact wash or greenwash. The other things that they might do in their industry. I think it's really important that you have investors who are able to back you up on that one.
Greenwashing is something which is a huge topic, of course, and sometimes probably erased thanks to the good PR work of the old corporations. I'm suspecting, at least, as a cynical journalist here, but for me, it was quite a shock to read that the carbon footprint thinking was a BP's PR campaign. What the heck?
Yeah, I know. Were you at the drop?
Sorry? No, I was not at the drop. No.
Oh, they were talking about that at the drop. There was a conference. Yeah, one of the talks was highlighting that by another journalist going, look at all these things that we're told about by the press. And this actually goes back to this. You know, it's I think it's interesting if somehow we've made more of journalism and the media in terms of the historical context, like what were the origins of this? Maybe there's a book in there, Tamo, for you to look at, you know?
Absolutely.
Where do these things come from? Just like we write about science, but where does that, you know, somebody discovered this? Well, it's not really. There's probably another 50 scientists who built everything on top of that. Where does it actually come from, you know, all these discoveries? And where do the things that we think and the things that we talk about, where did they come from? But yeah, climate footprint, BP.
I was just yesterday reading a Berkeley report on the Vera Red plus the carbon credits, which was rather, I mean, let's say it wasn't shocking knowing the inside of the carbon in the credit industry to some extent, but at the same time, coming from the Berkeley research, it was sounded a bit more than the Guardian reports from the last year or from the earlier this year or something like that.
Yeah, the carbon. I mean, we're on here because of biodiversity. Both me and you have a big passion for that subject. And I think the Biodiversity Brigade, as we could call ourselves, has probably been watching what's been happening with carbon over the last 5 years and seeing what we can learn from it to make sure this doesn't happen again. And if I may, can I talk about one of the companies that I am invested into, just because the relevance of this in the terms of the carbon footprint and what perhaps we can learn about nature and biodiversity. So one of the companies that Ananda are invested into is a company called Nature Metrics. They're a UK company, but they operate worldwide now. We were involved, we co-led their Series A. And what's interesting about them is they are using nature intelligence, so from the field to the boardroom, so end-to-end biodiversity reporting, ground truth at site level. So what I mean by that is it's powered by environmental DNA. So for those of you, you know, new to, you haven't heard of eDNA, as it's often referred to. So all living things leave a trace of their DNA in the environment. This is called eDNA. So they use, Nature Metrics use sampling technology to capture these traces and convert them into simple biodiversity health insights. And what's really interesting about this is that today, it was either today or was it yesterday, you'd be the expert on this as a journalist, the task force on nature-related financial disclosures came up with their final framework. I think all the PR is going out today. So in terms of this company and others like it working on biodiversity and what's happening right now from a policy perspective, that the two are all coming together. And so what this new framework does, it's been in beta for a long time, but now it's just been released, the final version, is it's all about recommendations for financial large organizations and capital, how they can start to use this framework to report on how they can be nature positive. Mm-hmm. And what's really important about this is, and the work that Nature Metrics and other people who are looking at biodiversity metrics, is that carbon has one metric and biodiversity, you've not been able to measure it until now, you know, and there's lots of people are starting to move towards what are going to be the metrics now. So having this framework, the next piece is what are the metrics going to be for these different industries? And being as a supporter of Nature Metrics, I really believe that underneath all this, we should look at what's going on in the ground and on the earth rather than just using satellites and GIS or drones, all very relevant, but it needs to be ground truth with what's happening on the base. Because, you know, we can, as biodiversity monitoring used to be done by people sleeping overnight on sites, you know, before construction was done or something like that, and they'd be in danger. They might be in the middle of the Amazon jungle or something, or they're in the ocean and they're looking at what's happening in the seabed when like a new wind farm is being done. So one environmental thing impacts another on the biodiversity level. It's all systemic. So even the great things about renewable energy could be doing some bad things in terms of biodiversity. So what they used to have when they had a person go and monitor this and they'd be reporting on one species, it's not really detecting the really crucial unseen loss of the small organisms that run the world. So these are microscopic organisms, and these are the building blocks of our ecosystems. I'm sure you know plenty about this too. Mm-hmm. So these are the species that cycle nutrients, maintain soil health, protect against outbreaks of disease or pests, and get that fine balance between nature that gives us clean water, productive agriculture, and healthy forests. I mean, you know, this is everything, isn't it? And exactly. If you use environmental DNA, you can start to detect the changes at a species level, these microscopic species. So where everything, where our world starts, this is how it should be grounded as a biodiversity metric, then using everything else on top as layers. Mm-hmm. So that's nature metrics. They're at the ground base of everything. And that's why I get so excited about this. Investing is about. Yeah. Really bringing things like this to life, putting money behind companies who are doing something like this. This is, I mean, what are your thoughts on this? You must speak to lots of companies.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest thought for me, which is coming from this, is that basically a lot of this kind of battle against climate change has been, I don't know, dumped down to the carbon trading. Carbon is something which is relatively easy to be measured. It's relatively easy to be somehow brought to the market. Now seeing evidence kind of piling up that, you know, relatively easy bringing it to the market means that, you know, you can write anything on paper and sell them as carbon credits. I mean, thinking about the biodiversity and in a bigger picture, we should somehow replace carbon with biodiversity in that equation, because we don't need just carbon, we need a planet to live on.
Yeah.
But how to get it done, that's the big challenge. And how to get it done fast, because we're kind of running out of time to be, you know, looking out on the climate change effects on the different regions.
I think there's, speed, that's always an issue, isn't it? A lot of the biodiversity databases are really, really out of date. And that's why we need to, you know, start an awful lot of investment going into people measuring things. That's where we are at the moment. And then hopefully with all this new data, we then can have more accurate, which has been a criticism of the carbon credits, and verified measurements, so that the large companies that will soon be mandated, and many industries like the extractives and the marine are already mandated to provide evidence that they're being nature positive. So not just putting things back how they were, but absolutely improving them. And this is a really positive move. And I think this will spread. We're starting to see, it's been slower in agriculture, starting to see a bit of a pickup with some of the customers that Nature Metrics is picking up in that field. And then we'll go through to the supply chain. And that's the furthest away at the moment. But the extractives, marine, coastal, and water industries are all really getting into this now. Mm. So I feel, you know, seeing where Nature Metrics is at the forefront of all this, I can see that change happening. It will never be fast enough, but at least we have this framework now that's come into play. We have all your activists and everyone's doing stuff on the ground. You've got the companies like Nature Metrics, but for me, it's always, where does the money flow? Where's the money coming in? Exactly. And for us, that's not even the VC level. We're just the small microcosm of, you know, of the capital. It's actually, where is the big capital? And what is going to, and this framework that's just been released is the start of all that. So I'm hoping we've all learned our lessons, going back to the carbon credits, and how do we verify this? Is this actually happening? Is there fraud? You know, are people investing in forests that don't even exist? Is there anything, what impact are they having?
Exactly.
Because the forest thing is like, canopy level. Okay, that's there, that's not there. What's happening on the ground? That's where the real change is happening.
And also in the forestry level, I think the kind of the big best example on difference between the carbon and biodiversity is that, you know, we should, for the carbon credit world, we should cut down all the forests we have, plant new forests from the same bamboo trees, and we would be fine with the carbon. There would be no problem on this planet. They could sink up all the carbon we need. We might not have any animals or might not have any other species.
Like I was just saying, all the other species that are interlinked that damage our food, our water, everything. There's not enough acknowledgement as to, we're all in a system and we're not linking it together. And I think more needs to be spoken about that. And I'm sure this is what you do on your podcast, getting that word out, that people need to think more systemically around the life that we can't see right in front of us. Mm.
Actually, in the previous episode to this one, we had a really interesting Lithuanian team talking about their mission to save ancient forests. And with the ancient forests, I think their mission was to reach first 100 hectares this year and then grow it to the 1,500 hectares, but with the logic of actually preserving the biodiversity and the life in those forests.
With environmental DNA, they're able to say exactly, they'll be able to say the thousands of species that are there and maybe some extremely rare ones too are on the red list.
But biodiversity is high on the agenda of this show on a regular basis.
It sounds like.
When you earlier talked about Ananda's areas you guys invest in, the diversity also was there. With the diversity, I've been pitching in some of the episodes here the idea that one should create diversity credits. So if, let's say, a Danish company needs to have 40% of the board members females, they could buy from this company credits, and the company would hire, 100 women in Zambia, for example, and pay for them. Wouldn't that be a good solution?
Oh, gosh.
I mean, it would be like carbon credits, right?
Yeah. Putting off what needs to be changed right in front of you. Yeah, you come on, you're giving me a lead there, Tom. I can't. I can't speak for the rest of the world. I mean, I work in London most of the time. The boards that I sit on are increasingly more balanced. It is getting there. It's something that we have in our term sheet. We have a diversity and inclusion clause around that the company will look at, exec hires and board level and assess this on a regular basis. The boards that I sit on, I'm always trying to encourage other forms of diversity beyond gender so that we could get to that point. But I know in different countries, and in the Europe especially, that this is still quite far behind what's happening in the UK. The US is quite more advanced, I would say. So there's still an awful lot of work to be done. I remember when I was a founder and I had a lot of women invest in me, and it was mostly female investors actually that invested in me. And I used to get pulled onto lots of events and things to talk about diversity. And after a bit, you get very tired of it because you want to be remembered for what you did, not what your gender is. But then, after I exited my company, I took a bit of time out and I was like, Zoe, you fool. You play a part in this. And it may be really annoying that your gender is raised all the time. A bit, for some of my friends, the color of their skin, I want to be known for the change that I've made, the goods, the products that I've invented. But if this is what we need to do, we have a role at this time in our society to act as role models, to be able to stimulate and act as catalysts. I mean, I have a position now where I could speak on a podcast and you want to ask me questions like this, whereas 10 years ago, the podcast didn't really exist, but a man wouldn't ask me these questions. It was always the women. So, and you were like, oh, you know, the anger that we had between us, but it's really nice that as a man, you ask us this. So things are changing. You need to keep raising them as a journalist and put people under pressure. There are LPs in the UK, such as a Big Society Capital, who are an impact fund of funds, who have publicly stated, so I can say this, that they will not invest in any other GP firms that do not have a woman, female, you know, GP. This is a lot in Europe. I hope there's going to be more LPs do that again. Once again, look at where this money is coming from. That is the biggest push that we can do. The more fund of funds that have this and say and stick to it, regardless of the exciting funds that could get in with, you know, major returns, this needs to be the change. Because once people, you know, from diverse backgrounds, whether they're female, people of color, socioeconomic, we have different life experiences. We see different things. We have different ecosystems, different founders. Nature Metrics, that's Kat Bruce. It's a woman. She hadn't had any VC money in. I knew her from 10 years ago when I was a founder. You see, we kept in touch because women do that kind of thing. We have all, you know, big groups of people and we meet up for wine, that kind of thing. We kept in touch and she was ready for her first VC. And that is, you know, just the wonders of being a woman. Simple things. It's able to get an excellent, you know, make an excellent investment in a female scientist that is doing such amazing stuff. And she's now managed to gather an enormous amount of capital from men and women. So it's not just all women that backed her, for
not
sure.
Anymore.
She will tell you that. Not anymore.
That's good. also, I run here in Estonia one monthly radio show with a couple of guests. And, you know, my policy has been that even if there is one episode with guests of only male, there will be an episode of guests only female. So kind of logical these days.
Things have progressed so much. I still get angry. I'm not as angry as I was 10 years ago at the way that it was, where I'd turn up to pitch an event. Two or three women in a room of 100. I mean, what? I mean, this would be like alien today in most places, which is, it's substantially changed. But obviously the amount of money that's going into, you know, VC-backed companies that are run by women is still miserably small, but we're, yeah, tiny, tiny 2%, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah, it's tiny. But I guess the more people like me who come through the ranks, and then we become a partner at an established firm, so not just starting our own, there are lots of women starting their own, but in the more established ones with the larger funds, then we can all together start to change that ratio. And just for the record, just naturally, I do not put any, I mean, I do talks on diverse panels and things like that, but just almost naturally, 60% of my pipeline is diverse. And the areas that I focus on are healthcare, it's nature tech, so, and tech bio. So most of the stuff I do is very technical. So, and 60%. Just like that. So for all those men who are investing out there who go, I don't know where the women are, you know, and I'm like, oh, get a woman on your team. It's a simple change.
Yes.
It really is. It's just naturally, it just happens like that. And these are absolutely amazing engineers and scientists that I get to speak to every day. I wish I could invest in loads more, but we're quite focused and I only do two or three investments myself a year, so it's really hard, you know, to pick which ones that I'm going to back. So but yeah, get a woman on your team, partner.
What are the next milestones for you personally?
Within work, some of the milestones we've got I look after all the research at Ananda. So we have a research strategy and we've highlighted 11 areas over the next few years of this fund that we want to dive deeper into and go out. So rather than be reactive to things, we actually pinpoint, you know, areas that we want to go into that we find are underfunded or just emerging and that our impact money could act as a catalyst. So I want to see out that thesis. it is a thing. You know, I'm in one at the moment where I'm in deep due diligence on the back of one of those 11 areas. So let's see where I can prove this out, rather than that market momentum that much of VC is goes around, because I think that also does not help in the diversity either, because you're just ganging up on the people who are already connected to a deal and you want to get in because it's competitive. Go out and find them. It takes longer, it's harder work, but I think then it's either your bias goes out the window because you're just finding the best team in Europe. So proving out that, I'm looking at ocean tech as another area of biodiversity, still finding my way, learning a lot about that. So any pointers on that, Tarmo, as to where I can look and learn more? Because I think that's going to take quite a few months for me to get my head around where and what and where to get the first investment in ocean tech when it comes to biodiversity. And then personally, I'm actually sat in Barcelona at the moment. So something that after COVID that I wanted to do was London's fantastic, and it's given me my dreams. It can be horrible and it can chew you up and spit you out, but it also, it can give you everything that you wanted. It is still a city of dreams. It's still open for people. I came from a very disadvantaged background, free school meals, all that kind of thing, first in my family to go to university. And it gave me, it was hard, but it gave me everything that I wanted and my dreams. But it's also frenetic. There's so much energy there. Sometimes you just need to take a step back and see some other things. So I'm spending 2 months of the year in two different places each year. So last year it was Munich. So that was good, because I was with the rest of the team. And I did Porto in Portugal. And then this year I've done Amsterdam. Wow, amazing stuff that's going on there. Wow. Better than I realized. And now I'm in Barcelona. And this is becoming quite an impact hub as well.
Absolutely. I can recommend Tallinn for next year.
Yeah, I want to go more east. I was thinking Berlin, but maybe Tallinn. Yeah,
maybe
I've been a couple of weekends to Tallinn, and yeah, there's a lot going on in Estonia. Yeah, I've got some friends there actually. Yeah, and that'd be fun.
I think that would be fun, and it would be useful hopefully also. I will send you a few pointers for your ideas, and you know, anyone listening, be free to do the same. And thank you, Zoe, for this discussion.
No, thank you, Tamé.
Hi, I'm Lessa Gaudet, host of Her Extraordinary Life by Design podcast, where we celebrate women who are shaping their lives one extraordinary day at a time. I speak with women from all over the world about what they do and how they are passionately pursuing their dreams and creating meaningful impacts on their communities. So come join us and learn about all there is to learn about these extraordinary women.
Hey, it's Tim from 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys, the comedy podcast you had no idea you needed. Join Ben, Jeff, and me as we continue our musical road trip back through the years and around the globe. See, just when you thought all white guys were like Joe Rogan, you come across three educators trying to remember when we were cool.
50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.